As we heard in Mrs. Smile Shia, we heard that Megillah Rut is really the Megillah of Chesed. And Shavuos is a holiday of Chesed. I would really appreciate if people who are taking food, if you can just try to keep it quiet so we can continue on with the program. So I figured it would be really great if we can hear a personal story about Chesed. And I thought, if I wanted to bring in a personal story about Chesed, who would it be? And of course, I thought of the Machlis family. As most of you probably know, the Machlis family is legendary for, you know, bringing in hundreds of guests every single Shabbos. I remember myself, as a seminary girl, going over there, trying to help out a little bit with the cooking, and it was just like this amazing thing to watch. You know, I just remember the challahs, these like huge challahs, and we'd make challah kugel and like have to like in this huge like pot, and like everything was just big. You know, it's like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. You know, you picture like everything is just oversized, and it's just an amazing chesed that was just done with such modesty, I think. We have the honor now of, is she here? She's coming in 1 minute. Okay, in 1 minute, Henny Machlis' daughter, Elisheva, is it Rosenblatt? Rosenblatt, I think? Yes, she's going to come and she's going to speak about her mother. So everyone can just take your seats and she'll come out in a minute. And Rabbi Machlis' daughter. Sorry, is that what? Oh, it says Rabbi Machlis. Oh, okay, I'll tell you. Originally, Rabbi Machlis was going to speak, and he's an amazing speaker, but he didn't feel so comfortable talking on a personal level, so he wanted to give more of a shiur, and when he understood what the slot was more about, he recommended that his daughter would come to speak. But we will get him a different time because he's an amazing teacher also.
Chodesh Tov, everyone. I'm Elisheva Rosenthal, the daughter of Rabbi and Rebbetzin Machlis. And as Zamira just introduced me, I was asked by my father to speak to me. You can hear me now better? A little better? Yeah? Good? Yeah? So my father asked me to speak today. He said that he didn't feel so comfortable speaking about Ima, my mother. He said there was so much to say about her, and he felt that a daughter can represent her better than her husband. So I took the opportunity. And so I just want to say hello, and I think it's such a special day to talk about my mother, because one of the main sources of the Machlises is Shavuos night. And the reason it's one of the main sources is because my parents met on Shavuos night. So I thought it's very appropriate to talk on Rosh Chodesh Sivan. The way my parents met was actually interesting. My mother was in a hotel, and she stayed up all night learning. And when my father's cousin introduced my mother's name, because she wanted them to go out, my father said, give me one good reason I should date this girl. And then she said, you know, she stayed up a whole night and learned on Shavuos night. She said, okay, that's a good enough reason, and they went out. So even though when I went out, my father always said, don't worry, you're not married, you're not your husband's chavrusa, you know, but my mother kind of was my father's chavrusa. Anyway, so I just felt it's very, very appropriate to talk today about my mother. So there are just like so many different topics that I could talk about my mother, because I think she, you know, represents so many different things. I was thinking, should I talk about the amazing mother she was? Should I talk about the amazing chesed she did? You know, she has, as some of you may know, or many of you may know, she had over 100 guests every Shabbos, which my father now continues having, every Shabbos meal. So it's Friday night and Shabbos day. And she, until her 13th child, she was the only one. We have 14 children, I'm the second to oldest. Until her 13th child, she was the one cooking, cleaning, preparing. My father did the shopping alone. Like, there were no volunteers that came. I mean, here and there, like, some of her friends, you know, would come and help her out. So I was thinking, should I talk about that? Should I talk about what an amazing wife she was? She was a very, very good wife to my husband, to my father. She supported him in every step of the way. If it was, like, his teaching in Bar Ilan University or teaching in the different yeshivas that he taught in and giving different lectures in different places. I think he still teaches today in the OU Center every week. And then I was thinking, you know, there are really three main things that my mother represented. And then I said, I think that those three things really could connect very well to Shavuos. So the three topics I want to talk about today, number one is Emuna, which you probably, if any of you have read the book, have probably noticed that that was a big thing that she represented. So it's called Emuna with Love and Chicken Soup, and that's the book about my mother. What'd you say? Yeah. The second thing I wanted to talk about is Simcha, and the third thing I wanted to talk about is Ahavat Yisrael. So the way I wanted to connect it all is to just to say that Emuna is something that my mother really, really lived by. They didn't just name the book Emuna with Love and Chicken Soup. That was really what my mother represented. And I was thinking, like, how could I explain to people what my mother represented? So I was thinking that really, like, the way we were told since we're little children is that there are two different glasses a person can look through. You can look through the pink glasses, the cheerful glasses, the glasses that are rosy and see the world in color pink, that everything is good. And then you can look in the darker glasses and see, like, how everything is bad and wrong and not so good. So as we know, everything in the spiritual world corresponds to the physical world. So I was thinking, just like we have physical glasses that we can look through, we also have spiritual glasses that we can look through. So I was thinking, what are those spiritual glasses that we can look through? And then I was thinking that it basically leads to two different types of outlooks. One outlook is nature, right? And one outlook is above nature, is the emuna part. And I think that my mother's expertise was to look through emuna glasses. There's so many stories about my mother and how she lived her very special life in a very, very connected way to Hashem. She always chose to take the path of seeing how Hashem is the main force in the world, rather than seeing anything in the nature force that is what's going to run the world. And there are countless amount of stories. I just chose like a few stories to say. I don't know if they're in the book, out of the book, so forgive me if you read them or if you heard about them. The way she started this Emuna path, I mean, she was always a very well-connected spiritual person, and she always, you know, was very inspired, and she was one who always inspired others. But the way she really started her Emuna path, I would say, was after her seventh child. She had a very, very bad cesarean, and that birth was supposed to be a natural birth, and she took someone special to help her out, and it ended up being a very not good birth. And she ended up having a very messy cesarean. And she was laying in her bed, and she had a lady standing near her, her roommate. And she gave birth in Bikur Cholim. And it was this old breast of lady who had her, I don't know, 15th child by then or something. And this breast of lady turned to her, and she saw my mother crying. And she said, "Why are you crying so much?" And she said, "You know," and she was told her the whole story of her birth and how broken she was with the birth that she had. And then she said, "I want to tell you my story." So she said, I'm a very, very, very poor lady. Her name was Shula Malka. And she was a lady who lived in Mea Sharim. And this lady in Mea Sharim had, I think by now, her 15th child. I don't remember the exact number. It was like a more advanced number that my mother said. I had never thought I would get to that many children. And lo and behold, a few years later. But anyways, so she said it was her, it was she was very, very, very poor. And she said, I never really had any money to buy my kids food. Her husband worked in some kind of job, but they weren't making ends meet. And then she said, you know, every night I look at all my children before I put them into bed, and I tell my children, and I tell Hashem, Hashem, these are my children, but these are really your children. And my children need so much nutrition, and they need so much. And I can't give them anything. I can barely give them bread, milk, eggs, maybe a little yogurt. So I'm really asking you, Hashem, give them every single thing that they need, these children. And she said, I sit every night and I ask Hashem for the whole list. Give them all the nutrition they need. Give them all the chachma they need. Give them any intelligence they need. Any energy that they need for tomorrow, give it to them. And she said, and lo and behold, my mother, she said, I would wake up in the morning and my kids were with rosy cheeks and happy. And she said, and all I gave them the night before was a little piece of bread and a little bit of yogurt or milk, whatever I had in the house in the fridge. And then she said, and then there's some days that I would get, like, you know, my husband made more money and I would get meat and chicken. And she said, so those days I didn't daven. So I would go to sleep and I would say, okay, the kids are for sure going to get up and they're going to have all the energy they need. And she said, in those days, I forgot to daven, and the kids would wake up, and this one had a runny nose, and this one had fever. And she said, it didn't happen once or twice. She said, every single time I didn't daven for the children to wake up with energy, those days my children woke up, and they were sick and not feeling good and had problems with the teachers and with the staff members. She said, and then I just learned that it's only Hashem. So she turned to my mother, and she said, don't you get it? It's not the food, it's not the bread, it's not the milk, it's not the fancy meat or whatever else I give them. It's only Hashem that makes these children strong and healthy. So I think that was the first time my mother really heard how much Hashem is really, really in charge of everyone and everything. And fast forwarding back, our 14th child is Down syndrome and autistic. And when my mother had this child, her name is Efrat, she's a beautiful, beautiful child, my mother was very, very broken. And I just remember her saying over and over, if this is what Hashem gave me, then this is the best thing for me. And not only is this the best thing for me, it's the best thing for my family. And not only is this the best thing for the family, it's the best for the whole Klal Yisrael. And she just said it over and over and over and over. And this is what we grew up with. We grew up with that everything was Hashem. You know, like there's a story about my sister, my older sister, who wanted a skirt when she was young. And she said, Ima, I want a skirt. And in those days, like shopping in Israel, wasn't mashu. and she said to my older sister, Yocheved, she said, Yocheved, just ask Hashem. And my sister said, a little bit later, I really got the most beautiful skirt. So it's not like Hashem sent it out of the sky, but she really taught us that everything is for Hashem. And then she also taught us that, you know, anything we go through throughout the day is from Hashem. Like any problem we would call her with, you know, we would call her up and say, oh, my children, my neighbors, you know, any other problems. And she would always say, Elisheva, just remember, it's Hashem. Hashem's calling you. And then she opened up the big world of talking to Hashem in her own words. And she would say, Hashem doesn't really need, you know, you standing at the Kota for 5 hours reading the whole Sefer Tehillim. Hashem really wants to hear your simple words from your heart. Tell Hashem what's bothering you in the most simple way. Tell Hashem what you want, what you need, what you're lacking, what you feel can go a little bit better. And she would say, like she said, you know, so many times I need so much and I just turn to Hashem. So one of the big things in the Machlis home, as part of the home, is that there wasn't like a lot of money flowing through. And they actually had to fundraise for themselves. It wasn't like a project supported by someone. So my father was a teacher in university, in Bar-Ilan University, and he brought in money. He was also a Rebbe in different yeshivas. But more than that, they would get, you know, supported by a few different people who were able to support them. And I remember one time they were very short with money, and we told my mother, Ima, there's someone in Israel now who always donates a lot of money to Shabbos. And she closed her eyes and she said, wait, so I should go to a meeting with her, talk to her. Wait, that doesn't sound right. I think I first should talk to Hashem, and then we'll see what happens. And she went and she davened and davened. She said, Hashem, you're the millionaire. And it was like a very, very wealthy woman. And she said, Hashem, you're the millionaire. You're the one that's gonna give me all this money. And you're the one that's gonna support my Shabbases, and you're the one that's gonna give me anything that I need. So first I'm turning to you. And then it really turned out to be that this rich lady didn't have time to meet my mother, and she, at the last day of her visit, she called my mother and she said, I'm so sorry I didn't have time to meet you, but here's a very big check. And she, I don't know if she said it's a very big check, but it was a very big check. So my mother said, you see, when you turn to the big millionaire, you get all the money that you need. She said, I'm not so sure if I went to the meeting thinking that she's going to give me the money, that I would get that much money. So that's just a story just showing how my mother really, really lived, that Hashem is in charge of everything. And also, another story that I heard maybe 100 times, maybe more, from my mother is the story of Rav Zusha. Whoever knew my mother knew this story. So there were two holy brothers, they called them the holy brothers, Rav Zusha and Rav Elimelech of Lizhensk. And they decided to take upon themselves galus. So they said, for now, we're going to go around. Like they said, we're going to take personal exile upon ourselves, and we're going to go, and we're going to not stay in the same place for 2 nights in a row. And they did that for quite a while. And one day, they didn't have where to sleep. They went into the closest inn, and that's where they stayed. And when they got into the inn, so Rav Elimelech was the older brother, and Rav Zusha was the younger brother. So Rav Zusha always let Rav Elimelech sleep in the inner bed. So he slept in the inner bed, Rav Elimelech, and Rav Zusha slept in the outer bed. And that night, in that inn, there were a lot of drunk people. And those drunk people decided, wow, here are two Jews. Let's get the Jew to dance for us. So he calls Rav Zusha and he says, come and dance for us. And Rav Zusha stood there and danced for these drunk people. And then they said, okay, you can go back to bed. Okay, so he goes back, he sleeps a little bit, and then the drunk people said, hey, we need someone to dance for us some more. So they go and they call Rav Zusha and they say, Rav Zusha, we need you to come and, I mean, they didn't say Rav Zusha, they said, hey, Jew, come, we need you to, you know, come and dance for us some more. So he came and he danced again for many, many, many hours. And it was almost morning time, and he came back really, really tired. And he comes back, and he lays back in bed. And then his older brother, Elimelech, says, you know, Zusha, they just called you twice already. I'm scared that they're going to call you a third time. So let's switch beds. You go in the inner bed, and I go in the outer bed. So Rav Elimelech sleeps in the outer bed. Rav Zusha goes into the inside bed. And they come really a third time, and they say, you know what, this time we're going to take the person in the inside bed. So they try to explain to them, no, I'm the one that was in the outer bed, we just switched, this is my brother, and he's older, and he's now the one that's supposed to dance. And they said, we don't accept anything, they were too drunk to hear anything. They said, you come from the inside bed, because the one from the outside bed danced already, and he had to go the third time. So my mother always said, you see, as much as we plan, Hashem has his plans, and we can't fool him. You know, Hashem knew exactly where Zusha was sitting, and he wanted Zusha to dance. So Zusha danced. So that was the emunah. So just to connect all, so to connect the emunah part, and then we'll also connect the Avos Yisrael and Simcha part to Shavuos. So it says in the pasuk, "Vayedaber Elokim et kol hadvarim ha'ele le'mor." Hashem spoke all these things to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hotziticha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Egypt. So the question is, this is two psukim, that one comes after another. It says, Vaydaber Elokim et kol hadvarim ha'ele, Hashem spoke all these things. And then he says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So why didn't it just say, Vaydaber Hashem Vayomer? Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Why does the pasuk say et kol hadvarim ha'ele? All of these things. So one of the mefarshim say all of these things, saying kol hadvarim ha'ele, is coming to teach us that everything in this world and everything in this Torah is to show us that there is only Anochi Hashem Elokecha. There is only Ani Hashem. So that's why it says kol hadvarim. It's all the things that happen in nature. Or it's all the things that happen in the world, and it's all the things that happen in the Torah that are coming to teach us Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So how do we actually come to this realization of Emuna? It's through leaving Eretz Mitzrayim. And this is very appropriate to know when we're, you know, leaving the Memtet Sha'arei Tum'ah that the Jews left, the 49 levels of deep impurities, thank you, and got to the 50th level, which was Matan Torah, which was the giving of the Torah at Sinai. And the way that we can leave Eretz Mitzrayim, so there's really two levels of leaving Eretz Mitzrayim. So if we look in the psukim that of the way it happened that Moshe Rabbeinu took the Jews out of Mitzrayim, so we see that there's a pasuk that says, Mi Anochi, after he sees the burning bush, Moshe sees the burning bush, right? Everyone knows the story that Moshe was standing in the desert and all of a sudden sees a burning bush and walks over and he says, what is this burning bush? And then he sees that it's Hashem wanting to talk to him. And then Hashem really says, you know, take off your shoes because the place that you're standing in is a holy place. And then it says, so he says to, Hashem says to Moshe, Moshe, come and you take off your shoes and I want you to go to the Jewish people and help them come out of Egypt. And Moshe answers, who am I? Mi anochi ki elech el paro. V'chi otzi et bnei Yisrael mi Mitzrayim. Who am I that I should go to Paro and that I should take them out of Mitzrayim? So the Mefarshim there say that we see that there are two different levels of taking us out of Mitzrayim, taking us out of the exile. One level is taking us out of the Paro level, okay, that who am I that I should go to Paro? So one level is Paro, and another level is coming out of Mitzrayim. So Emuna, the way we get to Emuna is leaving Mitzrayim and leaving the two aspects of Mitzrayim, which is Paro and Mitzrayim. So let's get a little bit into the two different levels of Paro and Mitzrayim and see what they represent. So as we all know, Paro represents Avodah Zarah, and he also represents haughtiness, a lot of haughtiness. Like he was the king, and as it says in Yeshayahu, it says, Li Uri v'ani asitani. The Nile belongs to me, and I've created myself. His whole essence was that he created himself. Paro says, I created myself, and I'm in charge, and who is this God of the Jewish nation that I should listen to him? So we see that Paro represents Gaiva, which is haughtiness, and the source is Avodah Zarah. It's the source that I can only worship myself. And I think that this connects also very much to like what my mother's essence was, that she was everything but haughty. And I think that anyone, I mean, even at the end of her life, when people would ask her to speak, she's like, I'm not exactly sure why they asked me to speak. Like she really, really held herself so nothing in her eyes. And she would always say like, like these guests, you would, I remember that we often would have very, very big groups of people. And we would say, like, Ima, are you nervous? There's so many people in the living room. And she would go to the back of the house. Whoever knows our house, there's the living room and kitchen, which is not so big, and then there's the back of the house where the bedrooms are. And she would go to the back of the house and she would say, Hashem, these guests are not mine. They're yours. They're your children. I don't have to make sure they have food. You're going to make sure they have food. I'm not going to make sure that they have everything they need. I can't make sure they have everything they need. They're your children. You take care of them. And this is really how she taught us that we are not here to serve ourselves. We're not here to help ourselves. We're not here to, you know, worship our own selves. She said we're all here to worship Hashem. Okay, so that's the paro aspect of it. And then there's the Mitzrayim aspect of it, which is very much lust. In Mitzrayim, there was a lot of lust. It says, Basar Chamorim, Basarim, Vizirmat Susim Zirmatam, that the flesh of the donkeys was all flesh. And that it's talking about Mitzrayim, and the flow of theirs was all like horses, like it was just all full of like blood and flesh, as they say. So then we continue looking at the process of how Hashem took the Jews out of Mitzrayim, right? He looked and he said, I'm looking around and I'm seeing if there's any merit that we have, that these Jews have, in order that I can take them out of Mitzrayim. And this is what the Torah, this is what we say at every bris milah, at every circumcision. We say that Hashem says, Va'e'ever alayich var'ech. I looked around all the Jews, and I was looking to see if something of it, and it says, Ve'at erom, and you're naked of all clothing. And I say, but then I see, Var'eh she'at mitboseset bedamayich, that you're turning and tossing in your bloods. And then I say, Va'omer lach bedamai chayi, Va'omer lach bedamai chayi. I see that you're tossing in your bloods. So there are two different bloods, which represent the two different parts of the exile of Mitzrayim. Right? Are we following? Yeah. Okay. And so he says that there's the two different types of blood that Hashem saw was one blood, which was bris milah. Right, that the Jews were circumcising the children, even though they were in Mitzrayim, and the other one was Korban Pesach. Now, Korban Pesach was here to represent the part of Avodah Zarah and the Gava, right? Like that the Korban Pesach was the sheep represented their Avodah Zarah, and the Bris Milah was the part of their Taiva of the lust that they had in Mitzrayim. So he said, in the merit of these two things, I'm gonna redeem you, and you're gonna come out of Mitzrayim. So now I just found something just very interesting, that it says that the Bris Milah represents Ahavas Yisrael, right, the love of another Jew, and that the Korban Pesach represents Simcha. So I'm gonna first focus on Simcha. And then we're going to focus on Ahavas Yisrael. So it's just a very interesting thing that the Emunah gives birth to two different paths, which is Ahavat Yisrael and Simcha. So the Simcha part, I wanted to say that my mother, when she got ready for any Chag or any Shabbos, she made sure that she will be the one to make the menu alone. She made every Chag a different menu. She, you know, like, and I remember on Shavuot, she would make, you know, blintzes and this kind of quiche and that kind of quiche. She said, but last year we had that, so let's change it around. And she'd make this kind of soup and that kind of soup. She would always make sure to buy all the children new clothing, which was a big thing for us as was like a lot of children. You know, we didn't always get a lot, you know, new clothing. And she made sure we always have new shoes and nice jewelry. And she said, this is a Yom Tov. We have to look gorgeous. And she would always put so much simcha into everything that there was. Like, it wasn't just like another day of the year. Like, so much work. Like, so many of us say, like, so much work. And there's so much going on. Like, I remember especially Shavuos, like, my memories of her is holding her hands, you know, like my basic memories of her is always being pregnant because I'm the second to oldest. So she was always like, you know, expecting or before birth or after birth with a baby in her hand. Or that's like my main memories of my mother. But my mother always made sure to have so much simcha. She said, kids, we're happy. You know why we're happy? And we would say, no. And she said, because we got the Torah. And you know what the Torah says? That Hashem is running the world. And she would take us to Chabad. There was a Chabad center, a Chabad shul next to our house. And she would, and you know, they would read the Aseret HaDibrot. And when they would read it, they would give us ices out, you know. And it was just, I just remember such warm memories of my mother putting so much simcha into every single chag, into every single Shabbos. There was never like a sad face, like, oh my gosh, again. You know, it was always like, let's be happy. Hashem is connecting with us. Do you know what's going on in Shavuos? And we would say, not really. And she would say, Hashem is marrying us. It's a wedding. Hashem is having a wedding with us. Hashem chose us as his Jewish people to be his kala. And she says, and just like a kala gets dressed for her wedding, and this is what she would tell us as little kids. I just remember sitting on the couch with her, and she would say, just like a kala gets dressed when she's going to her wedding and she puts on her beautiful white dress, she's like, we also have to get dressed so beautifully because it's our wedding with Hashem. We're Hashem's kala. And she made it in such a real way that there was just like, and then she was very, very creative, and she was very artistic. And she would take beautiful, she would take a lot of like different leaves and, you know, decorate the room, and she would take different flowers, and she made it so alive and so happy. And she would just say, kids, we have to be happy. We have to be connected. And that's another thing that she said. She said, who knows what happiness is? Like, she would ask us, like, not near Shavuos, but just in general. She said, who knows what happiness is? And we would say, happiness is getting what we want. Happiness is, you know, giving to another. Happiness is, and the ones who were smarter and knew that my mother's not going to fall for that, they would say, happiness is, you know, whatever she wanted to hear. And she would say, no, happiness is connection. And she would say, and connection is connection to Hashem. She said, the more we're connected to ourselves, the more we're connected to our spouses, the more we're connected to our children, the more connected we are to Hashem, the happier people will be. And then I don't know who knows her story, but she got very sick at the age of 50. She got breast cancer, and that's eventually what she died from. And she suffered a lot. Breast cancer. And one of the things we would walk over to my mother and we would say, Ima, you're in so much pain. So she would say, but I'm happy. And we would look at her. No, we said, no. We said, it could be you didn't hear us good. We said, you're in so much pain. It's so hard to watch you and look at you in this way. And she would say, I'm so happy. And we would say, Ima, why are you so happy? And she would say, because I'm like a little baby. And we would say, a little baby? What does that mean? She would say, I'm a little baby being walked in a stroller. Just like a little baby walks in her stroller, and she trusts that Hashem is walking her. You know, just like a little child walks and she trusts that her mother is walking her to the best place possible, I am sure that Hashem is walking me to the best place possible. So she wasn't even able to connect to her pain. I mean, she did definitely felt her pain, but she was so connected, and she had such an inner connection to Hashem, and she knew in her whole body and soul that if Hashem is doing this to me, then this is the best thing possible for me. and she really had happiness. And she said, and this is my time to connect to Hashem, and this is my time to talk to Hashem. And she said, I had so many years where I didn't have enough time to talk to Hashem. She raised 14 kids, and she had over 200 people every Shabbos, and she had a full house, full of people. Like, no one really knows this, but her night was like this. When she finally put all of us to sleep, she then maybe like slept for a little bit, like let's say a half hour, and this is something that's not written in all the books, because this is only something that someone who lived in the house with her saw. She slept for like a half hour, maybe 2 hours, and then she would get up. And then there were those night people that knew that Mrs. Machlis accepts them at night. And they would knock on the door, and everyone was sleeping, and she would bring them in, and she would feed them. And she had so much time and so much energy. And like, I remember a lot of times, like, there were all these, like, you know, if I would wake up to get a drink of water, I would just see, like, a few people sitting in the living room talking to my mother as if it's the middle of the day. And I would say, hey, what time is it? And she would say, it's 3 o'clock, go back to sleep. But she really had her night hours. And this is, like, beyond what anyone even knew about. It was nothing that she bragged about. It was just that she had so much happiness just doing Hashem's will, Hashem's Ratzon. She said, you know, there are so many needy people. She said, I have to stop thinking about myself. And I think that one of the reasons that this Mefarsh says that the Simcha comes to break the Avodah Zara and the Gaava, the haughtiness, is because the Simcha brings you to a place where you're not all day focused on yourself. The haughtiness brings you to a place that you're just always focused on yourself. And if something doesn't make me happy, and if something didn't go my way, then I'm miserable. And this is part of the Avodah Zarah. The Avodah Zarah is the worshiping of myself, the worshiping that I have to have things my way, and I know how things should go. And there are countless amount of stories of how my mother planned so many things in so many different ways, and things didn't go her way a lot of times, and she would always just say, well, I guess this is Hashem's way. And then there's like this famous story of Rav Zusha that she also used to tell us a lot, that Rav Zusha at night had to solve a big problem in the morning. So he sat and wrote down 25 different ways that this amazing big problem can get solved in the morning. And then he woke up in the morning, and Hashem solved it in the 26th way. So she would always say, kids, we can plan, and we can we can make our lists, but she said, always ask Hashem. She said, always ask Hashem that everything should go well, that everything should be successful. And sometimes when I said, you know, like I experienced like either failure or anything, like I know my sister just told me a story that she called her, she had her second miscarriage, one after another, and they were in pretty late stages of pregnancy. And she was very, very broken at the time, and she said, you know, Ima, I'm so broken. I just had my second miscarriage, one after another. And my mother said, oh, don't worry, be happy. And she said, but I just had my miscarriage. And she said, how could I be happy now? And she said, because you should know that there's statistics that show that if a lady miscarries, the baby is probably not okay. So I'm sure that the next baby will be very, very healthy. This baby was probably not so healthy. And she always found a way to just be so happy and just find the real essence of what's going on. And she said, she always would tell us, she would say, okay, so this went wrong and that went wrong, but I'm sure that everything else will be good. You know, like there's a famous story about the Machlises, that whoever knows the Machlises knows this story. So the story goes that something got spoiled in the kitchen. The chalent got spoiled in the kitchen. And everyone was like devastated, like, what are we going to feed 100 people? And she said, you know, we have such delicious desserts. So we'll serve them the desserts. You know, we'll feed them what we have. We serve, along with the chalent, we serve salami and pastrami. So she said, along with that, we'll serve the salami and pastrami, and then we'll serve the desserts. And then the person who was serving the desserts that day, I guess, had shaky hands or something, and all the desserts fell on the floor. And my mother looked to him, and she said, it's okay. She said, Hashem has a better plan. So they won't have the salami and pastrami, they won't have the chalent, and they won't have the desserts. But don't worry, Hashem's going to give them much better. Now, she didn't really have much better to give them, but it was just like an attitude that it's okay, that Hashem will take care, that Hashem is here, Hashem is running the show. She never thought she's running the show. She said, if Hashem wanted this chalent to go bad, it went bad, and if Hashem wanted all these trays of delicious cakes and desserts to fall on the floor, and it was like four trays, and I don't know why this person did all the trays, but all the trays fell on the floor, and there was no desserts left. And she just said, so then Hashem has his way of feeding these children. Okay, so that's the simcha aspect of my mother. And then I was thinking to talk about Ahavat Yisrael and my mother that she had, which I think is pretty obvious in all of the amazing stories that we hear about my parents. She always saw every Jew as the most special person in the world. And as children, there are many, many people who didn't smell so good, and you know, things weren't so aesthetic and cut clean and clear. And I remember that one of my sisters, my mother gave a big hug to someone who really did not smell so good, and to say the least. And you know, like, I don't know, like, what the person's story was. And she said, Ima, aren't you grossed out? Like, this person's really, really, like, and it was, like, above the normal. And she said, I think she just was released from a mental hospital, or I don't remember exactly the story. And my mother said, if you see a diamond in the mud, she's like, do you pick it up? Of course you pick it up. Why do you pick it up? Even though it's full of mud, you pick it up because it's a diamond and it has a lot of value. She's like, that's how every single Jew is. She said, this Jewish woman, she's a Jew. We love her. Even though my parents didn't differentiate between Jews and non-Jews, they had Jewish people, and they still have Jewish people, and they still have non-Jews. And she always said, you know, like, they're made in the reflection of Hashem. It doesn't matter if they're Jews or non-Jews. But I'm saying is, she had a special love to her brothers and sisters, as she called them. And she said, if this lady is so stuck in the mud, if this diamond is so stuck in the mud, you just go and you clean it off. But she's still such a valuable diamond. And that was really her outlook to every single Jewish person. And she always looked, and she always had special glasses, if we're talking about those special glasses. She always looked at those special glasses of how to help another person, where to reach, you know, where to reach out to another person. And just maybe one last story, yeah? What? Yeah. Just another part of the story is that when she was very sick, there was a very drunk person, Mordechai, who would sleep in our house, and she was going through chemotherapy. And as you know, that when you go through chemotherapy, you can't be next to germs. So she said, so everyone was screaming, like, you can't let this person sleep in our house. So she said, who knows how much merit I'm going to get for taking care of this Jew. She said, he's a Jew and he needs somewhere to sleep. He has nowhere else to sleep in the world. He's sleeping in our house. And I just want to wish you all a Chag Sameach and say that I bless you all and myself, that we should zocha to have real love for another Jew and real simcha and simcha of a mitzvah and real emunah in Hashem, and we should merit to dance in the Beit HaMikdash bekarov and receive the Torah the way we should.
Thank you so much. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, no, no, no.